Gun trashed on color. Yeah, you know that's us. Where we only speak the real and the real rock with us. Where we motivate the people and politic on success. Oh no, we ain't DJ Khaled, but they swearin' we the best. Gun trashed on color.
What's happening? It's Contrast Uncut. It's season 4, episode 18. I want to give a big shout out to Uncle Snoop's Army and Bobby D Presents. I appreciate you, brothers. It's your host, Zylo, aka DJ Juan Dollars, like I won some money. Ladies and gentlemen, today we got a really incredibly dope special guest. You know, he's a part of history for a lot of people that understand this hip hop game. He's from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. He's a well-respected music executive that has nearly 20 years of experience in this industry. He currently is the head of urban music at 1RPM, which is an acronym for Revolution People's Mind. This brother has been a part of some of the biggest artists and producers in the game and its history, such as Future, Lil Jon, DJ Drama, Don Cannon, my favorite rapper, E-40, just to name a few. Along with his prominent experience, he created his own company, 72 Music, a management company which serves as a one-stop shop for his clients, offering not only traditional music and business management, but also branding, digital marketing, tour management, support, A&R administration, licensing, music placement, and more. That is a true one-stop shop to make your career go from one step to the next, and sky's the limit. The company's current roster represents Organized Noise, Legendary, the Justice League. Shout out to Jaron Benton from his Funk Volume days and Mook Beats, just to name a few. And if you don't know who I got on the show by now, it's all good. We got all episode to chop it up with the legendary man himself, Orlando McGee. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You know, I don't do many of these, so it's good to actually, you know, get my face out there a bit. I like to walk through the grocery store and no one know who, you know, who I am or anything.
I appreciate you. Time's the most finite thing we have on this earth, so I gotta tell you from the jump how much I appreciate your time and you pretty much fucking with us, fucking with me and the viewers. Thank you, because it's something you can't replace and you don't do this often, so it's very important I let you know from the beginning. I appreciate you.
Oh, beautiful. All right, my man.
So Orlando, brother, what is the normal 24 hours for you, speaking of time?
Oh man. Let's see. We don't sleep much. So actually the pandemic has helped a bit in the sense of letting me be at home more often. I never got a chance to experience my home and found out all kind of things about it, the cracks and crevices and sounds and all that good stuff. And found out that I actually enjoy hanging out with my wife. That's a big plus. 24 hours, man, it goes from just generally waking up to emails. I mean, you wake up to emails and text messages. One thing about the music industry, it never sleeps. So at any given day, you know, I may have, you know, 20, 30 text messages by the time I wake up at 6 a.m. I usually wake up around 6, 7 a.m. every morning, and a couple of hundred emails. A lot of people kind of, and I tend to do it as well myself. I respond to several emails in the middle of the night. The ones that aren't super urgent, but I know I can, you know, get back to. So other people do the same thing. So waking up, you know, trying to put together a little bit of breakfast to eat, you know, phone calls right out of the gate from my clients. A lot of them are coming out of studios right at that time. So, you know, they're still up, kind of giving them the rundown of what I need to do business-wise that next, you know, during that day for them while they're asleep. Because a lot of them sleep early in the morning and don't wake up till noon, 1 o'clock.
Right.
So from there, several conference calls, you know, again, in the pandemic era, there aren't very many meetings. Everything's done via Zoom and Skype and so on and so forth. And the interesting part about it is so many people, you know, now have more access to you because you're not in meetings and so on and so forth. So everyone expects when they call your phone, you're supposed to answer. When you send a text message, you're supposed to answer. Email, you're supposed to answer. A lot of people don't realize is, I'm sure a lot of executives do now, you actually probably get more calls and messages now than before because everyone else is sitting there, you know, kind of trying to figure things out as well. So I mean, it's a plethora of phone calls and Zoom meetings and, you know, trying to figure out what's next and what's moving, you know, throughout the industry. You know, it's always a discovery thing. So I'd say I spend a lot of my morning just on the discovery hunt, just to know what's happening out there in the space. Who's new? Who's a young kid that's happening, you know, moving around right now? So I got my favorites as far as I go to my man, shout out to Mike Boyd. Monday to Monday, you know, I go to Monday playlist every Monday morning, you know, just to see what he's actually put on his playlist, see if I'm familiar with the acts, and if not, I go listen to it, you know, just to see, you know, what's happening in the space. So a couple others, Lyrical Lemonade, you know, there's several little playlists on Spotify that I can go to and just, you know, try to figure out what's new and young that's happening out there. I'm a bit older, so that's just in the playlist space. You know, I like to have conversations with a lot of DJs and tastemakers in different markets as well. So I call, you know, DJ Ferris in Chicago. I like to get in his ear. DJ Funky in Atlanta and the Coalition DJs. Just a lot of different guys in different markets. Just to say what's up, see what's going on with them, what's happening in their markets. And then kind of keep those relationships, that rapport going. Same thing with producers, songwriters. You know, you just want to know what's on the pulse of, you know, things happening in the space. Whether it's different executives, a lot of them do different things in different markets as well. So,
safe to say that you spend 18 of your hours a day communicating, networking, and pretty much building brick by brick into each foundation that you are a part of and watering a lot of gardens.
100%. Yes. That is, man. The volume of phone calls I get is ridiculous. I mean, I can't help not to be on the phone or connected to the phone all day, every day. It rings. Actually, I've had malfunctions from so many things going on in it at the same time, me trying to text and call and then people trying to FaceTime or, you know, different things. And the phone would just shut off on its own. So,
I was doing too much.
Right, exactly. Which is a good thing, though.
Right.
You know, one thing you don't want is the phone to go dry.
Come on.
Because once the phone goes dry, your bank account goes dry to a certain degree. In the past, I've had an issue with kind of passing along things and work to, you know, other people. I have had a big staff at one time and just working, you know, within my company at 72. And other times, you know, it was just me by myself. Right now, it's just me and my man, Jason Brown, my business partner. We've been together for a long, you know, years and years. When we start, actually, interesting story with he and I, with DJ Drama, Cannon, and Sense, they were in a crew called the Super Friends when they were in college.
Shout out to Mark Atlanta.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was working at BME Recordings with Lil Jon, kind of running things at his label. And the guys came to me one day. Drama, we ended up using him as a DJ for the Little Scrappy. And on the road, I was out with them one day, and you know, Drama just heard me over on the phone one day, just in a business conversation with someone. And I'm assuming he just, you know, we never discussed it. He liked what he heard. You know, came to me like, yo, you know, we need some representation. We need somebody to help us out. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, no problem. I'm going to be honest. I had no idea what to do and neither did they, but we had a chance to sit down and put together their vision of what they wanted, you know, out of life and their careers. So we took that. They parted ways from the Super Friends and created the affiliates. We all did it together. We set up an office space and man, we went to selling mixtapes. There was a guy, my business partner now, Jason Brown, he was around, kind of, he had before the blogs were popular and email lists, he had this little email list and text list email list called Atlanta Urban Mix, and all the parties and everything, he would do all the blasts for everyone. So he was doing consignment little records for different people. And I asked him, like, hey, you know, are you interested in helping us out with the mixtape stuff? He kind of came in, and I'll be honest, he changed our lives. Everyone. Like, you know, Gangsta Grills is a big – Jason Brown was a huge part of Gangsta Grills. Wow. And it's, you know,
you know, I just want to add something for the viewers that don't know. I've had the honor of having Don Cannon on the show, and a lot of people don't know that Gangsta Grillz actually had a battle Rhea and billboards because they didn't believe that they were getting all this content from all these different artists, not respecting the hustle and the grind that they were really marking on the map because they are the affiliates. They wasn't saying that because they made it up. No, they're affiliated with everybody. And that's where Gangsta Grillz connected. And I'm sorry, you bringing up such dope history from the very jump. I'm like, oh, people don't know. They actually had to prove themselves to the biggest people in the game that certified people in American music.
That's right. That's right. Yes. I mean, and it was a point where, I mean, Drum, the way he was doing it, he had all the relationships. I mean, we can't take credit for any of it. Drum built, man, he built out a huge network of relationships with artists. He had the brand. What we were able to do was kind of go in and show him how to magnify it times 10 and how to monetize it also. You know, that was a big key. I mean, shout out to Clinton Sparks, man. It was mixunit.com. Big Oomph. Actually, I had a conversation with Big Oomph today and we were talking about it. I remember because the way we were doing the mixtapes, we were selling them. We were selling them for such a small amount of money. It took a conversation with Oomph to really give me the perspective of where, you know, where we needed to be. He was like, man, you know, y'all kind of killing the market because you're doing it so cheaply that, you know, no one else can compete. I'm like, okay, cool. So we made it a point to go up on the rate. And I remember one of the mixtape sites coming to us like, yo, we'll just bootleg your shit. I was like, yeah, but we'll just let everyone know that you're not official. So, you know, they actually conforted to us. And I'll never forget one day, man, the military was a big part of Gangsta Grillz as well. Just in the early inception of it, because a lot of the, you know, members of the military were overseas at the time. I think it was the first Desert Storm or somewhere in one of those eras. Man, the amount of orders that we got from the soldiers overseas was ridiculous. And everyone, you know, everybody wanted to know what was happening back home. What was the it music? What was, what was popping? And we had it all on those mixtapes. And just the groove of it, the energy from the mixtapes was so huge that, you know, it was ridiculous.
And you guys were curating playlists before playlists were even thought of.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. And then it grew from, you know, the mixtapes to, you know, one day we, you know, thought about what can we do next? And it was a radio show. So it started at Sirius Satellite Radio. Shout out to Reef from and Ronnie Mills. All those guys over there at Sirius, same thing. You know, the guys had never done radio before. They had no idea what to do. Cannon was very technical in a sense, so he knew how to, you know, maneuver through it all. But, you know, it was a couple of bumps in the road the first couple of episodes. But, man, that shit took off like wildflowers. And it was just one day a week, you know, 2 hours a day. And we basically played the mixtapes on the air. I mean, they didn't play them on the air. But exactly what Drum and Cannon would do inside of his bedroom, in his living room, rather, at his apartment, they did on the air at Sirius, and it made history. And
the streets is watching, the affiliates. I mean, bro, I've been blessed to be co-signed by Cannon. And you know how many people have came on there just for their little interview to get co-signed by him? That's important to history.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, went from there. We did the radio station here in town, eventually, which we knew it was going to happen, both stations. It was, you know, two really big, powerful stations in Atlanta came to us and was like, yo, we want the guys. So me and my business mind was like, okay, cool. We're going to go sit down with everybody. Let's see what everybody has to offer. But what we were able to do, too, beforehand, we took, which we didn't really know what we were doing, but we had an idea. One of the producers at one of the stations here, I'm not going to name him because he worked for one of the stations when he actually did this for us, but he did a sound check. We didn't even know what a sound check was. I'm on the internet trying to figure out what it is, you know, got the history of it. Okay, cool. So from this Sirius show, we did a sound check and sent it out to a bunch of stations. What we were trying to do was syndicate the show ourselves at the time, which syndication was a big deal.
Right, it is.
And we probably could have done it. We should have done it, but we didn't. We decided to go at one of the local stations, and then, which is 107.9. Guys are still on the air now there, and with Sirius, and you know the rest is history. Once they got on the air, you know things kind of took off. We started a little record label, affiliates music group. It didn't necessarily work out the way we wanted it to at the time. did a deal with Atlantic. Well, actually, with Warner Music Group as a whole. Drum, we did an album deal with Drum at Atlantic. Cannon was a producer. I remember his first placement was and imagine this as a producer. Your first placement is with Young Jeezy, and Jay-Z's featured on the record.
Huge.
Yeah, so, you know, that was crazy in itself. So the success just kept coming and coming. We were hugely blessed. And then, you know, we kind of took a pivot turn. I mean, with the success of what I was doing at BME, the guys' success of what they were doing, people were calling. So, you know, I wanted to try out something that, you know, an opportunity I had at Warner Brothers at the time. So I took an A&R job. I had put together, actually, a crew called the Attic Crew. I put out an independent album called Forever. And, you know, kind of got a bug from that. They were actually performing one night in a nightclub. I shared office with Vince Phillips, who was the partner in BME, and Little John, Vince, Cersei, all of those guys. And we went to go see the crew that I was, you know, I was putting together, put out an album on the Attic Crew, and some little kids opened up for them. And that just so happened to be Lil Scrappy and Trillville. So, you know, we're at a teen club. We're supposed to be the headliners. And, you know, Vince and I are kind of standing there like, yo, who are, like, it's thousands of kids in this club. It's like 2,000-3,000 kids. Man, when that music came on, it shit blew our mind. We had no idea what we were seeing. And no one in the city outside of teenagers and kids knew what was going on. We're like at this, you know, on the east side of town in this nightclub, and every kid in there knew every word of Headbuster. They knew every word of Never Ever. So I know Vince got on the phone with John, and the rest is history. And BME, the record label, which had already got started, was really born. That's from that moment. I mean, Scrappy signed the next day. He brought his mama to the office, and he signed his deal the next day. I think Trivel took a little more time. John and crew took the crew over to Warner, and the rest is history. The label was formed. I know John had a great relationship with E-40, and I'll never forget, kind of, you know, me being from the South, I'm like, I love E-40. He's actually dope, but I have no idea what to do with this. So they flew 40 out to Atlanta, and we hit it off. Like, we sat down and just started talking. I mean, he's one of the greatest men I could actually say I know in life. Like, the life lessons and stories, he's a person that I want to emulate my life after. I mean, he's that good of a person. So, I mean, from the cooking to the business acumen, his relationship with his kids, relationship with his wife. I mean, his lifestyle is what, coming from the streets, you know, I was born and bred in a housing project, you know, and, you know, Carver Homes here in Atlanta. So coming from where we come from, to see a guy like that, you know, become who he became, you know, makes you want to be better in life. So just, you know, shout out to 40 for that. Like, he showed a lot of guys the way. But man, we sat down, and my only take was on a couple of the records, if we could just slow down what you're saying so people can hear it, it'll work. And that was my only suggestion, my only 2 cents. Shit, we went in the studio, John. I mean, I'm here at Stankonia. We recorded that first album here at Stankonia, and the rest is history. I mean, I can't say I A&R'd it. And, you know, product manager, A&R, whatever. I was here. I did a lot of the backline info for it. You know, I may have had a suggestion here, but not really. That was John and 40. I mean, and so many things kind of came into play there where the UNET record with T-Pain. That was T-Pain's first feature ever. And to have Keek the Sneak on the record, the next record, Tell Me When to Go. You got to think. I mean, the cards were just, I mean, it was dealt for us. I give a prime example. I forgot there was a writer that had just so happened to come by the studio, and he was like, you know, 40 was like, man, who's T-Pain would sound good on this record? Like, yeah, he would. The writer sitting there, Maurice Garland. It was Maurice Garland. Maurice was like, yo, I just interviewed him today. We're like, what? Oh, word? Call him. He called him. Shit, T-Pain's down the street. Pulls up to the studio. Lays his verse. Okay. A couple of hours later, tell me when to go. Boom, 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 boom. Okay. She's jamming. I'm like, damn, John, this is special. Yeah. 40 mentioned, man, I want to get Keek to sneak on this. It'd be perfect. He did it. Calls Keek. Oh, man, I'm next door to Stank on you. He's at a studio that's next door.
Wow. Hold on. You got Boston two to the studio.
Hey. Yeah, like
you got East Oakland, bang, like, East Oakland and Vallejo right next to each other. That's crazy.
In Atlanta, Georgia, of all places. So, you know, just to experience that, to be around it and making history. And then kind of, you know, I'd say our input was kind of trying to not play the culture. So, and I've been in a lot of those moments. So with Gangsta Grills, you know, making sure the South is represented well, drums represented well, even John's voice on it. You got to think, that's Lil John's voice on every record. So I made it a point that every BME record single we were putting out debuted on a Gangsta Grills record, you know, CD. Just to build out the Southern culture, to keep it real. Same thing with E-40. You know, you got to think, it's a bunch of guys from Atlanta. We had to have real conversations with everybody in the Bay and make sure that the hyphy movement was not taken for granted or overly commercialized to where, you know, they couldn't profit from it. You know, one thing about culture, I like to make sure the proper people are making the money off of it. We did a documentary called The Hype on Hyphy. That was phenomenal. That went along with the album, just a hypey record. I mean, when we went to the Bay, you know, we made sure everybody who was relevant in the movement was part of it, in it, you know, got a check from it for the most part. I'm sure there may be a couple of people who may not have, but I mean, we shot the video. It was real shit going on at the time. I mean,
you talking about an era that I grew up in, like high school. This is my college days. I'm at college my first year, and then Fody drops "So You Tell Me When to Go," and the whole dorms went crazy. I'm at UC Santa Barbara, like one of the most biggest
parties. Oh yeah, so I'm sure out there it was ridiculous.
And then that part where he said he was gonna grow some dreads, and you know, because Jesus going dumb, and we just all went fucking crazy. And then, you know, Federation, shout out Federation. Federation was a big part of the hyphy movement. But, like, I want to make sure we know, people know right now, hyphy is not so much about the dance. It's all about the energy. And, you know, people in the Bay that are hyphy, you got to stay out their way.
That's right. 100%, yes. So, you know, being a part of that was phenomenal. Just being able to see it, you know, kind of cultivate and, you know, go to the heights that it went to. I mean, shit, a large number of artists got signed to deals after that. I'm pissed off that we didn't sign all of them, but, you know, sometimes you just got to let people fly and do what they do.
Hey, it's coming back around right now, bro. Like, yeah. I promise you, Capolo is really pushing the mark. There's so many, like, different people that are making sure that that sound doesn't go away, but they elevated it. They put more content, a little bit more, you know, of some of that energy that sticks. Because back then, everybody was rapping about dumb shit. They was rapping about what chains they got, what car they got. You know, it was all dumb stuff. Versus now, there's so much serious content that's being put out by these brothers that you can't deny it. And that's something I'm excited for the Bay Area, because it's going to, you know, get some light to the soil that, you know, that got some real good oil.
That's right. That's right. And an interesting thing about it is, I think the internet is taking it away a little bit, but I love the era where you could go to a different part of the U.S., and you would hear different types of music. No one sounded the same. You go to the Bay, there was a sound. You go went to LA. LA did not sound like the Bay. LA had its own sound. Shit, you go to Texas, they had their sound. You go to Chicago, there was a sound. New York had a sound. Miami had its own sound. Atlanta had a sound. You know, every place you went, there was a different sound. And man, when a record broke through from that era, everybody supported it, you know? There's nothing like having Do or Die with a hit record out there, you know. There's nothing like Outkast, their first, you know, hit record coming. Hearing Snoop and you know, Dre out of the West Coast. I mean, 40 and the Click out of the Bay. I mean, you know, shit, so many out of New York, you can't even name it all. I mean, even in D.C. with go-go music, you know, it was just so much, and the culture was rich everywhere you went. I mean, techno out of Detroit. You know, just all of that energy. I think the internet has kind of you know, pushed it all into one pot of where whatever market's hot at the moment, that's what it's going to sound like. But, and fortunately for Atlanta, I mean, we're at the forefront of a lot of it. I mean, we love it and we reap it, but I really do miss hearing, you know, the first time I heard Too Short, I was like 14 years old, maybe 13, 14. I got invited to the Olympic Training Center. It was a program with the Boys and Girls Club where they sent me out to the Olympic Training Center to train at team handball. And it was kids from all over the United States. Man, some Hispanic kids from the Bay brought Too Short. And I was sold at that moment. Like, oh my God, this is the most incredible shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yes.
And, you know, just that energy is not to say it's missing now. I mean, I'm older now, so I'm sure kids are still discovering things that way. But I feel like it's not enough of it going on right now.
No, you're talking about
sounds being created in different markets. So.
You're talking about such an important error because at that point, you're talking about Too Short. Too Short was really making that word bitch, like, you know, okay to use because on the East Coast and especially in the South, you couldn't call a female no bitch. They were all queens. And I guess they still are a queen. But on the West Coast, we got a different way. Like, a man could be a bitch in our scenarios. Like, you feel me? You acting like a bitch, you're going to get treated like a bitch. And it gets out there like that. But Too Short was the first person to really go across the United States and make it comfortable for people from the West Coast to come and talk about bitches and hoes and pimping, because that wasn't necessarily allowed on certain regions. And, you know, just to speak on it, bro, I do really appreciate the growth that the game has evolved into, because yes, it has been region by region by region. And yes, it's been an amazing thing to see all these different sounds. But right now we have people sharpening iron so strong that they're trying to blend or make their sound into these other markets. Hey, this same pocket and key matches this ball sound in Miami. This same pocket and key hits the New York drill that matches the Detroit sound. And it's like, okay, how do I, as a producer, incorporate that to what I already know how to do and make better? And then artists are learning how to adapt. And that's why we're getting these amazing collabs and bridging that gap of East Coast, West Coast bullshit into its unity. We're making incredible music. And that's something I am really, really proud of. But you're right. I do miss that old school of like, man, what the hell am I going to get when I go to Houston? And why is it different than Dallas? Why is upstate New York, shout out Buffalo, shout out Rochester, way different than the five boroughs? You know, and all of that shit gets to me because I love it, because the growth, the opportunity and sound and just sharpening his ear grows. And that is right there, the whole point of this hip hop game to take over rock music, because there's so much more into it. It gives you the rhythm and blues. It gives you that source of pop because it's popular music. It gives you that source of just the songs and melodies of the 80s because people have that energy and love by however they incorporate that sample, their voice tone, the voice box or talk box or you know, we go back to Cher and when she used her first auto-tune.
Yes, 100%. That's it. And that's what made me migrate to producers for that matter. I mean, you know, with Organized Noise, kind of interning for them. It's an interesting story. I got an internship at the office. But I think I worked in the office for about, 3 months, 4 months. And I had to run an errand to the studio, which is the dungeon, which is Rico Wade's house at the time. Man, now I got a chance to go. And, I admire these guys, all my early years. So I'm like, wow. To go hang out, because they rarely came to the office at all. I think I'd seen Rico by the office one time, Ray by the office one time, and Sleepy by the office maybe once, and never the artist. So get to the dungeon and to drop off something. Then I was asked by the engineer there to go make a run to the store. Shit, gladly, let's go. I'm back, and I made it a point. You know how you just hide in a corner? I just never left. I just sat in a corner. And eventually, Bernaski Wall, who was an engineer there at the time, kind of, you know, started asking me to do just errands here and there. So during the day, I would intern at the office, and I would go to the studio at night. And that's where our relationship came from. And, you know, it was a level of trust. And, you know, I was, you know, still studying what was going on. And eventually, over time, you know, Ray, Rico would ask me my opinion on certain things. And, I mean, nothing important, I'll be honest. Just, you know, small little things here and there. And I interject, and you know, I didn't know they were paying attention, but they paid attention. So it was like, okay, cool. You know, kind of know what you're doing. But I made it a point over time to learn the business as well. You know, the honor of being in the studio with them was learning what music sounds like. I mean, obviously they got it from L.A. Reid and so many other guys. So I was, and technically I'm being trained by L.A. Reid and Babyface because these are the guys that came, you know, through them. So, you know, I had the honor of being in the studio with some of the greatest producers in the world between Organized Noize and Little John. Like, John is phenomenally one of the most talented producers I've ever experienced in life. And the same thing with Organized. And the key is the sounds. They always, you know, experiment with the sounds of, you know, how the music should sound, you know, be. And the structure of it, song structure, is a big deal with them. And a lot of guys learn that from them. I mean, you got to think about early Future coming through the dungeon at, you know, 16 years old, who's Rico Wade's cousin. You know, he learned how to write songs sitting in there listening and watching Dre, watching Big Boy, you know, watching Outkast, I mean, watching Goody Mob, watching CeeLo, you know, all these guys, you know, putting together their songs. You know, so he got taught from the best in the business. And I would actually say, and it's debatable, but I might think Future might be one of the most talented songwriters I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. I mean, he has it. You know, one of those things that certain people just have. He's one of those people that is specially talented, and he was able to find his special talent. So he could put together, I mean, he was doing melodies, Blueberry Yum Yum, the Ludacris record. Future wrote that. That, you know, a lot of people don't know. This is, you know, 10 years before he becomes Future, he writes a hit record for Ludacris. You know, a lot of those things took place around there. I mean, in respect to, you know, artists, a lot of people wrote different hooks and, you know, had input on different things in the studios. So that's a beautiful thing to actually see. And I was firsthand sitting right there with a lot of it.
I want to let you know, I had Serge Duran on the show, and he said that's one of his biggest regrets was not being able to convince the people to sign Future. And, you know, to be in that space, because he saw the same greatness you saw, is one, incredible. Two, to see someone grow into, they don't know how long they're going to stretch. They don't know how big their muscles of this memory is going to contain. And for you guys to see that and believe it and catch it, that's a blessing. Because that brother, we just, not too long ago, he has 20 hit records that are platinum or gold or double platinum. And I believe he has a diamond record. Like, y'all better stop playing with those numbers, because numbers will not lie.
Yes, it's crazy. I mean, and it's, you know, testament to his work ethic. One thing, he's, everywhere we went, he was in the studio. There was always a studio. Every city we went to, whether it was a hotel room, every city, we went overseas, we went to Europe, we went to the UK, find a studio. We would always have to know what studio was in whatever city where we were. If not, we had to create one in his hotel room just to get the ideas flowing out. So that was a true testament to, I mean, Rico for that matter, and his work ethic coming from Organized Noize, where every day in Rico's house, there was work being done. He woke up out of his bed, walked downstairs to that basement, and hit that drum machine. And from wake up to the time he went upstairs to go to bed, that's what he was doing. I mean, I don't even know if he got a chance to enjoy the money that he made during that time period, because, you know, it was always work. I mean, and a true testament to it now, you know, there's thousands of published songs out there that, you know, are residual income. And that's one of the things that kind of brought me back into the fold with them is, hey, let's figure out a way to manage the catalog. So back to Organized Noize and being in that dungeon from the internship, eventually Rico started taking me places. So I got, you know, I had started myself a little bit because I was doing the BME street team stuff. Also, I was interning at Organized Noize. I mean, I had a full-time job at Macy's. It was crazy. I did not sleep ever in that time period. And I had a girlfriend. But, you know, he started kind of just taking me out to different places. So it's one thing when people see you by yourself in the hustle, but then they see, okay, cool, he's with him. And it's funny talking to Rico later on in life. He was like, I knew what I was doing. You know, I knew what that would do, you know, for you. And, you know, I appreciate that to this day. Like, that's my brother. I will kill a motherfucking Rico Wade right now. If he told me to shoot a nigga, I'm going to shoot a nigga. You know, just because I know he's done for me in my life. And several other individuals, for that matter. So, you know, it was a special moment in time in Atlanta, and, you know, me being there and being a part of it with him, you know, it went a long way. So people got to know who I was, my work ethic, and everything. So it built my reputation as someone that's legitimate and you could do business with him. I took, you know, everybody can't take advantage of that. I'll give you a prime example of something. Man, the most embarrassing moment of my life is when I went into a meeting with Billy Calloway. He was working at Hitco Music Publishing. I had a producer. And just the fact that I could get the meeting, first and foremost, Billy was one of them top-level execs. And I'm like, man, you know, I got a meeting at Hitco. You know, I'm managing a producer, had no fucking idea what I was doing. All I know is I can get you in the room. Who knew the first thing out of his mouth was after he listened, all right, cool, let's do business. What you want? And I'm sitting there like, I have no fucking idea what to ask for in a publishing deal. So I'm stuck. And I'm like, all right, cool, you know, I played it off like, shit, we'll get back to you. Then the deal didn't happen because I fumbled it, I'll be honest. And, you know, that taught me a lesson though. So yeah, and, you know, from that meeting with Billy, you know, it taught me that lesson of never be unprepared. So one of my – actually, probably – I'm not even going to say one. My best friend in the entire world is an attorney named Yawanda Carter Scott. She, at the time – was Yawanda in law school at the time? I think I may have been the one who convinced her to go into entertainment law. I'm sure she probably had it in her mind. But I was already in the mix kind of doing it. So I'm like, yo, you need to come forward with this. She actually had taken a job in New York. She was working in New York for the city, but doing entertainment stuff on the side. But I had to go to her like, yo, I need some help. I need you to give me a rundown of what this shit means. So, you know, once I got a general understanding of it, I made it a point and I let her know I will never be in a situation like that again. And so there was a lot of women that helped me out in that. On top of Rico, there was a young lady named Dee Dee Hibbler, who she actually handled all of the business for Organized Noise in the office. You know, I kind of came to her like, yo, I want to know everything. Help me figure out everything. And during my internship in the office, man, she did something that no one else, she gave me a key to the office. I'm an intern, I'm not an employee. She gave me a key to the office like, here, come as you please. Here's XYZ. Here's these documents. You can take a look at them. Whatever you need, have questions with, come to me. I'll answer it for you. So, you know, I had the best of both worlds. I had one of the best in admin, business admin right there with me. And I had an entertainment attorney who's probably she's a top entertainment attorney in music right now. I mean, from her client list, Yawanda, she's kicking ass right now.
Oh yeah, so, I follow her.
Yeah, so you know, I'm dealing with her on one side, like with information, dealing with Dee Dee on the other side with information. So it kind of turned me into, someone that has a lot of knowledge on deals and deal making, what's good and what's bad, and what it means on the revenue side. So now I'm able to utilize that in a lot of courses. I mean, I've been a part of so many deals where no one would know I'm even involved in. Just because someone would come to me like, yo, I need your help a little bit. Sometimes I take a little money, sometimes I don't. And I don't have to manage everybody. It's just, hey, man, I need some information. I need help. And I'm there for it because, shit, someone helped me in my career, you know. And being fair is one of the things that was always instilled in me. From Rico, man, he's the integrity that he has and the integrity that E40 has. Those kind of things rubbed off on me where I never wanted to take advantage of anyone. Anytime you go to the table and negotiate something, everyone walking away from the table has to feel like, you know, they did great business. And when the money comes in, everyone wants to be able to high five each other like, oh my God, we did great business. And when shit fails, because it does, everyone wants to be able to walk away from the table like, shit, we did great business. It didn't work out. I don't feel taken advantage of. You don't feel taken advantage of. So shit comes back down the line, we can do this again. You know, that's my moniker on being able to do business. Shit, when I parted ways from the affiliates, we're friends to this day. I mean, their manager now, Layton. I mean, they're, you know, it's Generation now. Layton, we talk all the time. I can call Drum and Cannon and ask him for anything. I mean, same thing with Future. When we parted ways, you know, that's my brother at the end of the day. I know this guy when he was a kid and he had nothing. We made millions of dollars together. Why am I going to be mad with somebody because we made millions of dollars together? You know, we had different paths that we wanted to travel on, so we did so. And from, you know, Organized Noise, well, I'd say from the internship, you know, to working at BME, from BME, I mean, I, you know, the work that I'd done there, it caught the attention of one of my good friends now, Naeem Ali, who took it to Tom Wally, who's the chairman of Warner Brothers. He called me one day like, yo, Tom wants to meet you. I'm like, oh, shit, that's the boss boss. Like, you want, what the fuck you want with me? And we get to town. He's like, what you think about coming to work for us? And I was like, you know, it was tough because I had built such a great rapport with John and the crew, but, you know, and with the affiliates. And because signing that contract, I couldn't do anything else. I could say it was a mistake, but it wasn't because I learned so much in doing it. So that's how I parted ways with the affiliates, was signing this contract with Warner. You know, we made it a point to, hey, you know, I'm still here. You know, you guys still there, whatever y'all need. We down with each, you know, anybody I've ever been in business with, we're still down with each other to this day. You know, they could call me, I could call them, and we could always do business. That's how I like to do it. And took a job at Warner Brothers. I was there 6 years, 7 years. Did some great records over there, and eventually I got fired. So, I mean, but I think that happens to a lot of executives as new people come in. Tom Wally, you know, went on his way. It was a new crew come in. They want their people. So, you know, which it was a blessing for me because I started my own business at that point. You know, when that's when 72 Music was born out of that. And from there, I had learned so much on the record side of budgeting, you know, how to manage the budgets, what actually happens inside of a building. What a lot of artists don't know is when they cussing you out as an A&R and you inside of that meeting and they like, man, we need to drop this motherfucker anyway. And you sitting there like, yo, this guy's cussing me out right now. And I'm sitting here arguing and fussing and fighting for him in this meeting to get more money to go put a single out or shoot a video. It's frustrating. So a lot of people that think that job is easy, that was probably one of the most stressful times in my entire life because there's so many things kind of hanging in the wind. You know, we make great music with E-40 there. I mean, we make great music with Mike Jones there. Man, Crime Mob, that Crime Mob shit was some of the most phenomenal music we made while I was at Warner Brothers. I mean, Naeem and I just putting that shit together was ridiculous. I mean, from Rocky, I mean, we made monumental records that to this day still live. And, you know, I've always been a proponent of producers, doing a lot of business with producers, which is why I still do it. I met Justice League during that time period. And same thing, as I'm segueing out of Warner, that's when my guys from Organized come back to me like, yo, you know, we need some, you know, fuck with us, you know. What are you out there doing? And I just started helping just because I'm around. Those are my brothers. So it wasn't even no management and nothing like that. There wasn't nothing, ain't no agreement. It was, shit, you know, this is what we got going on. What you think? And every project that I worked on, I made sure they were considered for. And, you know, built that rapport with Justice League for the same reasoning. And they're like, yo, we love what you're doing over there with these guys. You help us out. And again, Rook and Corleone, those were my friends. You know, they're in Atlanta, moving around, and I'm just like, hey, you know, I love what you guys do. How about y'all come in and come over to this session? Come over to that session. This person's in town. I'm going to call. I don't manage them. I'm just, you know, plugging shit. You know, when T.I. was working on his album, Jason Jeter's one of my partners. We came up in the music industry together. Jason's an intern at Patchwork back in as I'm an intern for Organized. So it's a class. As our class rose, we, you know, all stayed in touch and, you know, became good friends. And, you know, we're able to do business together. So that's one thing that I will always tell everyone, you know, participate with your class. You know, as you see people ascending, those are your peers. Practice with your peers and do good business with them. That way, as they ascend, they can pull you down and help you. You never know what room somebody else is in and your name may get mentioned. You don't want to be like, oh, man, I don't fuck with him. That guy, fuck that. So you want? Oh, yeah, that's a good guy. I know him. Like, he does good work. So,
Orlando, brother, I want to make sure I'm getting this right. you manifested greatness so well that you knew you were going to go on a path, didn't know how you were going to get there, but you knew in the manifestation and prayer that the hard work, that those shoes in the floor would start to meet the grounds that you saw before you. And you just know you had to keep on going. And what's so amazing that everyone should get from this interview is that this brother recognized his gift and wasn't afraid to go follow what he wanted to do. He may not have known what it was, but he recognized, hey, I got to learn it. There's an opportunity here. I'm going to plug away. And once I plug this away, this wall is going to stand still and I'm going to be able to climb over it and build with people. And you continue to remain in the rapport of relationships, because relationships will get you places money cannot. Relationships will build you and build walls and doors that you thought never existed, connected to places. And then boom, this whole new identity comes about and you have an opportunity because you kept that rapport in your relationships. Not every relationship is worthy, and you sort of get to learn about a person right away. Their aura tells a lot. Their actions tell a lot. Their face tells a lot. And, you know, you just got to be mindful of that as you grow with people. But one thing I want to point out is Nappy Roots was one of my favorite groups, too, growing, you know, going to high school. E-40 was one of my favorite. I listened to Snoop Dogg first. First ever rapper ever was Snoop Dogg. And I'm blessed that he presents my show. It's an honor. Second person was E-40 and The Click. And, you know, as I grew up, Nappy Roots was something I've listened to before football games. I listened to after games. I listened to, you know, I was homeless in high school, and that was something that really kept me striving to, you know, I'm not going to be broke no more. You know, being poor is just something of the past, and it's going to be something that's going to build me. And, you know, all of these different artists and the integrity that they put on their music so that you can relate was so great to me. And, you know, what's incredible is I have you in front of me, and you have relationships with so many artists that I admire, look up to, but not just me, the whole world looks up to. And you've had an intricate part, whether it's pressing a button on saying something because you know, hey, that actually recognized something I should say here because it's not talked about, and it pressed a button on you to put it out. And, you know, that's a passion thing, that's purpose. That's something you're willing to do for free, and you're going to get paid for it at some point, but you just got to keep on going along with that gut feeling of this is right. And I just want to make sure that not only I sum it up real fast, but if we spend a little time on relationships, because that is the key to unlocking that 10,000 hours in a field. You would never have been an outlier unless someone gave you a key to be an outlier.
Yes, 100%, man. The relationships that I've been able to build over the years, that's my lifeblood. That's my Rolodex is how I live right now. That's my revenue. You know, being able to pick up the phone and get someone on the phone and get them to move is a big deal. And they only move because of a couple of different things. You know, they know the history that I've put out there. I wouldn't put them in a bad predicament where it's a bad look. But they'll get taken advantage of. So, you know, I think those are keys in business as a whole. You know, you don't want to just call everybody every time. You know, you got to be able to source through things. So, no, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. No. It's just amazing hearing the back, because so many people, like, they can listen to it, but they don't understand sometimes the levels of degrees that you're going through, the levels of just networking and connecting the dots. And you're truly making Rembrandt, Picasso paintings with all these different dots you connect. And I just, you know, it's so important because people will wash up a relationship or wash up something over five funky dollars and not realize that they're the problem, not the relationship.
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, even, you know, my work with Earth Gang and Jid, it taught me so much. That actually was a great point in my career because I was so complacent in that moment before being introduced to them that, well, it was, you know, I got money, you know, what do I really need to do it for? I'm not overly rich, you know, and I'm not a material guy, but I was comfortable in life. And it was something about working with them that kind of gave me a drive, like having Barry around, that his energy all the time was on 10, was like, shit, I'm challenged now. I got to do some shit just to keep up. So, you know, being in business with them made me run. I'm like, okay, cool. That first tour they did, you know, it was me calling Top Dog. I just called Top Dog like, yo, I got these kids in Atlanta. It was Ab Soul's tour. You know, just signed him up for management. You know, can I get him on Absol's tour? He's like, sure. He was like, shit, ain't no more room on the tour bus, but you know, put him on the road with him. I was like, all right, cool. Call my business manager, $15,000. We get, you know, the little car and, you know, some gas and hotel rooms for him. Jason, my business partner, and I put them out on the road, and the rest is it. They met J. Cole on that tour and stayed in touch with Cole from there, and the rest is history in their career.
But specifically about Earth Gang and Jid, their energy, their aura, their spirit is living through them whenever they touch a mic. Whenever they're actually able to be seen, you can feel that energy when you see them. And it's so amazing that God used them as a vessel to make you uncomfortable, to recognize that there's so much more work for you to do.
That's right. And that led to a job, you know, Roc Nation and A&R, senior VP of A&R there. I mean, well, from Future with Benny Pugh. Signed Nicole Bush, and we were able to put out a bunch of records there as well, you know, which, you know, was a great experience in itself, you know, kind of being in, I'd never really been out of Atlanta doing business, you know, so being in New York and watching that Hustle and Bustle, again, gave me a new tool of how to do business, you know, kind of getting in business with, you know, Eric Sloan and 30 Rock, and him having the biggest record of 2020 with The Box, you know, kind of took things to a whole nother level. So again, I'm walking in the rooms again with these same, you know, top tier execs. Like, okay, cool. You know, Eric is, you know, that's, he's leading the charge in there. But he's like, yo, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I'm like, all right, cool, bang. We should do this. We should do that. Not, you know, then that's what I mean by being able to get into situations with people and young execs. You got to be able to pass the information. I mean, you know, Wilt Wallace, who's the senior VP of radio promotions at Warner. Now, that's my little brother. He, you know, he was my intern, Jennifer Drake, you know, over at Sony ATV. She was my intern and my assistant. Byron Wright over at Epic. He was my, you know, he was my intern at BME. Like these, if you can't pass the information along, you know, to other, you know, executives to be able to do good business, then, you know, might not be a place for you. Because a lot of those young guys, and they'll tell you, like, you have a conversation, you know, with a lot of these young guys. They're like, man, fuck y'all. Y'all didn't give us any information. All you want to do is take, you know, that kind of thing. So you're like, yeah, you know, you're right. To a certain degree, some of my peers have done business that way because they it was done to them, though. So at a certain point, you know, in the executive cycle of it, you know, we want to do good business and you know, keep your name clean because karma comes back. You know, I'm a believer of karma. I've had – even my brother, man, my younger brother's like, yo, you have to be the luckiest guy in the world. Like, nice. Some of the positions and jobs and you know, things that I've just fallen into, you know, is surprising to me sometimes. You know, it's like, yo, what the fuck? Like, and it's because, like I said to you before, certain rooms I was in. Scooter Braun. I'm sitting on an airplane landing in Los Angeles. Scooter Braun and I got really cool in Atlanta. And Scooter's probably one of the biggest moguls in all of music right now. He's in a meeting. He calls me from a meeting with the head chairman of one of the record labels. Like, yo, I just co-signed your name with such, 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 such. I'm like, oh shit, he puts me on the phone. I'm going, crazy shit is, I'm leaving the airport, going to a meeting with this executive, and Scooter has a meeting before me. I guess he asked about me, and Scooter makes it a point to let him know I fuck with him. He's one of those guys. You never know, and that was from just good business that Scooter and I did when we were, you know, young guys in Atlanta just trying to figure out a way. This I know Scooter before Justin Bieber, Scooter Braun, so... You know, he's in Atlanta doing parties.
Thank you. All right. Contrast Uncut is season 4, episode 18. Man, big shout outs to Uncle Snoop's Army and Bobby D Presents. I appreciate you, brothers. I wouldn't be able to do incredibly dope shit like chop it up with Orlando McGee about his history and about so many different significant moves. This brother was able to put some seasoning, some salt, and some water to watch not only things grow, but grow into a gumbo pot of success. Thank you, Orlando, for coming on here and just being a transparent and vessel to this industry and continuing to make people grow.
I appreciate you for having me, man.
Yes, sir. God bless you, brother. Happy Friday.
This really remind me of some, ayy. This really reminds me of some Tribe Called Quest. Hip hop really taught me to give it all I got left. Wu-Tang taught us how to beat the projects and tell my story over beats and it could be a project. Look how it all begun, bum skibbity bum, yeah. Grew up on that Nas, on that L, on that pun. Old soul when I was young, crisscross make them jump. Battle rapping for respect, my nigga, this ain't what you want. Can I kick it when I'm rhyming? Be a legend through Ebonics, was a sticker boy. Felt like Sticky Fingers played at Onyx. Can I live track 8? Feel like Jigga 96. Without a reasonable doubt, the album turned me into this.
Man, I know you guys can't smell this right now, and I ain't talking about none of that other stuff. I'm talking about some of that good stuff, that smell good stuff. I think it's breakfast. What time is it? It's breakfast time. Make sure you tune in to Contrast Uncut no matter what you're doing. Whether you're eating breakfast, you're smelling good food like I'm smelling, or if you're smelling other stuff, we're good to watch too. Make sure you tune in. Thank you.